Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Mahani Jahangiri, and welcome to Conversations with My Dog.
Today's guest is Ryan Neal, senior animal behaviorist at Blue Cross. Ryan heads a team of behaviorists who help pets to get back on their paws using modern science-based techniques. Now, it is an honor to welcome Ryan on the show. Namapaw, Ryan. Namaste. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
This is the first time for our listeners, so they understand, it's the first time in a very long time that I'm actually looking at my guest. And I'm not just looking at one guest, but I'm looking at two guests today in the background because we are online and also we see each other visually. Who is this in the background?
This is, she's called Kit and she's a Dutch Shepherd. And I've had her for 2 years now, and she's joined us today really because she was a stray. She was in a pound for about 6 months, and I strongly suspect that she's been the subject of some really inappropriate punishment-based training, and to a large extent, it's kind of shattered her confidence. So. It's taken me a long time to sort of work with her to build her confidence back up, but I have that sort of firsthand experience as to the consequences of the wrong approach.
The wrong approach, and that's why you're here on the show to talk about the wrong approach. And I think we should just sink our teeth into it. What is, in your view, the wrong approach? Talking from canine training.
My view is that the relationship that we share with pets, and we're specifically talking about dogs today, is really special, and it is a relationship of two halves. So, you know, we invite dogs into our homes, and with that they bring so much. You know, they really enrich our lives so much, and I believe that we should honor that relationship by holding up our end of the bargain and ensuring that whilst they meet our needs, we meet their needs in return. And that means being respectful and kind and considerate with everything we do, but specifically when it comes to training. And there's an ocean of options and choice out there on the internet and on places like YouTube and on the kind of programs that we switch on and watch in the evenings. Some of them are still using really outdated methods, the kind of ways that we used to train dogs years ago that are about pack-based theory, hierarchy, or we're using punishment-based techniques where we use aversive kind of tools to give dogs unpleasant experiences when they behave in a way that we don't like. And I understand through my work, I've worked for Blue Cross now for over 30 years, I've dedicated my whole career to helping animals to really live successful lives and to enjoy successful relationships in the human world. And I have a lot of experience as to the damage that can be done from the wrong approach, and I think that people generally don't understand when they source trainers or specialists or experts as to what to look for, and they may not really appreciate the consequences of using the wrong kind of training. And as I work at Blue Cross, you know, I see these sort of the worst that can happen when relationships break down and fail, or when you know, severe psychological damage can be placed on pets that receive the wrong kind of training, with the best of intentions, because most people generally don't go to a trainer to make things worse. They go to trainers to make things better. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack and talk about, and I'm really passionate about this subject.
I know you are passionate, and I remember how passionate the whole of Britain was about this subject when Cesar Millan went on that ITV show years ago, and I think he must have used that collar, that shock collar treatment and whatever they are. He used it a couple of times, and the guy, he was about to do a British tour of Cesar Millan, and I think I've never seen someone taken down so quickly by the general British public. And I'm still shocked, though, that these equipments are still available. I can just Google them, and I can get shock collars and things and stop barking mechanisms and things online. I can still buy them, and they're still available here in the UK. How come?
It's. I think there's a misconception. I think a lot of us in the UK think that because they've been banned in Wales for over 10 years now, and they're now illegal in Scotland, that we are the same, and we're not. They are perfectly legal here, and you can order them and have them and just start using them. And I genuinely believe that you can do damage with anything. You can misuse an extendable lead and cause damage. But these are devices that are specifically designed to give a really unpleasant experience to dogs. So for your listeners that are shocked by the fact that they're legal, you know, as a call to action, you know, contact your local MP, put pen to paper, or write your email and join us in our attempts to get these tools banned, because we are woefully behind Wales and Scotland in this matter, and it's really embarrassing.
It is embarrassing because Wales has all the puppy farms and things like that, and they've managed to, you know, initiate Lucy's Law with Mark Abrahams, you know, and all this, and that's now being banned. It's still, other things are going on, but anyway, tell me what happens to a dog when they get the wrong treatment? Are we now talking about rescue dogs or general dogs?
My real area of expertise is rescue. I work at Blue Cross, and I've worked at Blue Cross for over 30 years. I started when I was 13. I'd finished school and run down to my local Blue Cross to walk dogs. But back then, it was really common to put a choke chain around a dog's neck and to take them out for a walk. So I kind of entered into that world at a time when things are really different now. So we believed that dogs were pack animals and that we had to be dominant and we had to overpower them, otherwise they were going to outrank us. And so I've lived through a period of training. I'm really glad we've learned from, and now we're really embracing the science and the evidence-based approach, which tells us that powerful behavior change is a result of positive reinforcement. But obviously, I know through the world that I live and work in, that this is a problem for everybody. As I said to you before, most people make contact with a trainer because they need help, and they're just not getting the right kind of help. And the programs are designed to look irresistible. You know, we've got people that are charismatic. We've got editing that makes really complicated work look very simple. And, you know, so this can be like a quick win if you follow me or if you emulate me. And we don't really get to see behind the scenes, and we don't really get to see the end result. And that's what I'm really curious about. You know, if these methods really worked, then I think that we would be seeing those results. But more importantly, I think when we're talking about resolving behavior problems in dogs, are we solving the problem for the person, or are we solving the problem for the dog, or are we solving the problem for the relationship, for both parties? Because if, let's say, we have a dog who is barking at something, you can just jump straight in and use an aversive training technique and suppress that behavior. So, okay, now you don't have a dog that barks. So you've pretty much solved the problem for the person. But if you stop and rewind, and before you start suppressing that behavior, try to figure out what that is a symptom of, because barking is the symptom. The root cause is the emotion. Why is the dog barking? Well, let's say, for example, we discover that that dog is frightened of other dogs, and they're using their natural communication system to say to everybody, I can't do this. I need space. I need to resolve this problem because I'm at risk. So barking is a natural communication style. Now, if we punish that behavior, then we have a dog whose emotion is, you know, they're feeling really frightened and worried, but now they can't ask for help. Now they can't communicate with the other dog or their owner or anybody about how they're feeling. So we're stripping the dog of the way in which they would ask for help. And that can only be a bad thing. So if we're really truly understanding that we're not really interested in dealing with the symptoms of the problem, we're concerned about the root cause, and we discover that this dog is frightened and that that barking is a way that they're trying to let us know how they're feeling, the responsibility is on us to understand their language and to respond accordingly. The way that we would work with a dog like this is to remove the dog from that situation completely and start to build on some skills out of that context. So, you know, if we're working in a situation where a dog is really stressed, then they're not able to learn because there's a fight and flight mode that's kicking in. There's a self-preservation. If you've ever been really stressed about something, can you learn and can you retain that information? So because we understand that that's not the place to do the training, we take a break from that situation, we move away from it, and we build skills out of that context. And we very gradually, incrementally start to build that picture back up again when the dog has the confidence and the ability to communicate effectively with their human counterpart. And it is a lengthy process, so there is no quick fix. But the journey that you take, I think, is beautiful because you're learning all about your friend, and your friend is learning that you are there to help them to resolve that problem. And in the human world, if I have relationships with people and they know that I will listen to them when they need me and I will protect them when they're vulnerable and I will always be there, then they will have that trust in me. And I think that's what a friend is all about. You know, you're not a friend if you're not going to be that for somebody. And I think that there's no difference for me. You know, the dogs that I have in my life, they're not my pets. They're not there just for me to pet and for me to sort of get all of the fun from them. They're my friends, and I am duty bound to honor that relationship and friendship, and to do my part to understand what their language is and what they're truly asking for, and to respond appropriately. And there are so many people over the course of my career that have acquired a dog that's been quite challenging, and the journey that they've taken to help that individual dog overcome challenge has resulted in them having a career change and becoming a trainer themselves or becoming a behaviorist. And I just think that's a wonderful outcome. So yeah, I could talk indefinitely about this.
Just a little thing, like, for example, Robbie, he doesn't like me opening his jacket buttons. He doesn't like clicks. He just hates it. He started hating any sound, any abrupt sound, like click or snap or even kiss, like a little. He's 8 now, and he's very, very sensitive to sound. He's become very sensitive to fireworks. He never had a problem with that. So imagine I was going to use clicker training on Robbie, he would be a nervous wreck. It must have a huge effect on a dog's ear, because they, how many times more do they hear? 20,000 times more. Their hearing is so sensitive.
Yeah, in principle, that when we talk about clicker training, what we're using is a marker that we teach the dog. You know, when you hear the marker, then a reward that you want is coming to you. So we use clickers for convenience, but it can be anything. It can be, you know, a soft click that you make with your mouth. It can be anything. So I would say with your dog, what you could do is really gradually desensitize them to whatever sound you're using. If it's attached with a powerful reinforcer, it won't take long for that noise to be welcomed, you know, to elicit a positive emotional response. So it just depends on how you approach that problem and how you're changing that emotion from negative to positive.
I would just want to say there can't be any positive outcome with a shock collar treatment, or is there anything positive in it?
It's extreme, so it's an extreme thing to do, and whether we like it or not, the truth is that punishment does work, but with something like a shock collar, the timing, the skill that you need to use is really high, so you would need to be as proficient with a clicker than you would be with a button on a shock collar. So if you have the skill and timing, then you may actually stop the behavior that you want to, but the consequences of misjudgment can be catastrophic. So I've encountered dogs that are frightened of grass because they're contextual learners, and when they were shocked, they were looking at grass and they were on grass. So they associated that thing with the aversive stimulus. So you can imagine the damage, the psychological damage that was done to this individual dog. And it's never worth the risk. And it's not like there isn't a more powerful alternative. So reward-based training, I'm really passionate about it because it's powerful. It can really change behavior. And at the same time, it develops your relationship with your pet. So why wouldn't you choose this? And it makes training fun. So why wouldn't you want to change learning into a fun game for your friend, where you enjoy spending time with them and you're teaching and learning as a consequence? I'm dyslexic, and I spent the whole of my time at school feeling that I wasn't intelligent because there was only one way of teaching at the time. And it was really stressful, and I still really get anxious if I have to do like an exam or something. So I have this sort of affinity there that when I'm working with clients and their dogs, I know it's really important that we treat every dog as an individual and we work out what type of dog they are, what their learning style is, what they want out of life. And then we convert that into rewards. We use those as reinforcers, but we make it fun. If you think of anything, you know, an assistance dog or a police dog or a scent detection dog, that training, that incredible training that takes our breath away when they do these incredible feats, started with a bunch of treats or a ball in a kitchen or someone's front room, and it develops from that point. When you see dogs work with passion, it's because they know a reward is coming. And when you see dogs that do things under duress, you know, there's loads of videos online where dogs are seemingly, you know, displaying fantastic behavior, but they are doing it in a shutdown way. Their body language is saying, well, I wouldn't choose to do this, but the consequences of not doing it aren't worth considering. And they're poles apart. I would much rather a dog do something with heart and soul and energy and vigor and enthusiasm because they want a positive reward than to make them do something because they're fearing a consequence. And we need to understand the difference, and we need to talk about it and give pet owners who generally want the best when they go to trainers to understand the difference because they're poles apart.
Have there ever been any, this is so sad to ask this question, any lost causes, a case where you had to let go of the dog because he was too aggressive, too damaged in your 30 years experience?
Many. And, you know, I wouldn't want to shock or upset your wonderful listeners, but the reality is yes. I sadly, despite our very, very best efforts, have encountered pets, dogs that are just too damaged, and as a consequence, they live in perpetual fear. And we know that dogs live in the moment. They can't understand the concept of time. They can't know that a month from now things might be okay. And we factor that into the way that we care for them. And I want this to come across in the right way, but I see this decision that I have when I need to make it a privilege, and to release a dog from suffering that they can't escape is a welfare concern, and I'm privileged to be able to make that decision on their behalf to release them from a situation that is intolerable. But it's not before I try my very best to help them. But to say that all things can be resolved with training and with the right home is not true. But with every time we have to make this difficult decision, I become more motivated and passionate about being proactive. The dog that we lose because we can't help is probably a product of poor socialization or mistreatment from owners that should have had a better understanding of the dog they invited into their home. So then it makes me more passionate to provide that. You know, there are puppies now that we brought into our homes because of lockdown, and we must socialize them, not just because we want pets to be happy, but because we want them to survive the challenges that they will face in life. Not everybody loves dogs. So one day someone will frown at them. You know, they might meet someone that will shriek and jump. One day someone might tread on their tail. One day they might see a lorry reversing, making a shrill noise. And we want them to have a foundation, social skills that will enable them to recognize that this is okay and this is part of the world that they're living in. So you can kind of say socialization is like going to school, but it's more than that. It's a survival kit. It allows them to cope in the world. And when it comes to rehoming, dogs that have been well socialized are emotionally resilient. They cope with change. So if their owners die, then they may grieve for a period, but they will bounce back if they find themselves in kennels, which is no place for a dog. But if they are emotionally resilient, then they will cope with that experience a lot better than dogs that don't have the same resilience. So someone once said to me that a good coach teaches you to be without them. And I this resonates massively with me because I want to train dogs and work with them so that they can live anywhere and live with anybody. And that's when I know we've done a really, really good job, because we've prepared them not just to cling to somebody, but to thrive and to be as independent as they can be, empowered to sort of make choices and to learn because they're enthusiastic and passionate and happy rather than frightened.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Vernon Kay.
And I'm Holly Mackay.
And we're here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Parenting Past the Pandemic, brought to you by Aviva.
Yes, we're going to be delving into a whole heap of parenting topics, from the generational gap to online safety.
And some of the big topics which have come up through the pandemic, such as helping to manage our kids' anxieties and how we can affect the world they'll grow into.
Parenting Past the Pandemic. Find it wherever you found this podcast.
Which actually leads me to my method with Doga. As you know, I do yoga. I'm the founder of Doga, yoga for you and your dog. And whether you know, sometimes I get a bad reputation because I've been on these talent shows and people think I'm lifting dogs and swinging dogs around and things like that, and it's dog yoga. But that's not the case. In my class, what I'm hoping, and I very much resonate with what you're saying, in my class, everybody comes, just the owner comes to yoga because they're doing their own yoga practice. It's not the dog that is doing the yoga practice, it's the human that does the yoga practice. And these owners come knowing that their dogs will be off lead for a 90-minute period of time, roaming around freely, doing what they want, more or less, and allowed to figure themselves out. Now, people from outside might say, this is terrible. The dogs start weeing, the starts humping, one starts doing something and the other one follows and things. But I tell the owner, no treats, no clicks, just water, yoga mat, yourself, focus on me. And for 90 minutes, it's fascinating what I see in the relationship, what happens there, because it's so hard for the owner to focus on me when the dog misbehaves. They keep apologizing during the session. Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. And I have this lady who does actually pee. She cleans everything in there. She goes around very quietly. She scurries around. And I say, it's fine. In this session, it's okay. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I want to see energy. I want to see what actually really happens. Who dominates who? Who? Because when you do the yoga, you get a chance with breathing, the correct breathing, to draw your senses inwards, meaning the human is able to become aware of smell, taste, and also the change, the smell changes, the behavior changes, the movement changes through the breath. And the dog has a chance to have a bit of time out, just to waltz around and have a sniff. And I believe the most confident dog or happy socializer is the one that actually moves from yoga mat to yoga mat, runs around, does the zoomies, tires himself out, and eventually they'll find a yoga mat, and it might not be the owner's yoga mat. So what I notice, funnily enough, it's the Chihuahua's owners most of the time. I don't know why it is Chihuahua owners. They might have a rescue Chihuahua, and you can see them already holding their dog close to the chest. And yes, there is a German Shepherd in the class. Yes, I invite German Shepherds. Obviously, well-socialized German Shepherds. But every size can come into this class. Everybody is in this class. It's not too many. It's about eight people, eight dogs. But you can see they're lifting and holding and just not relaxing into this session at all. And of course, that little dog, that is the shocking part, is when I say to the owner, you can now release your dog on the floor, that dog that they've been holding all the way through, that little dog will not move from the spot. And it sits there and it shivers. It's not right. That little dog should have the confidence to roam around, to play around, to be naughty. This is my philosophy within a Doga thing. And I was going to ask, am I doing the right thing here? I think Doga could be a great little training material to the whole training solution, you know, something where owners just allow to let go.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a couple of things that you've mentioned on have really made me think, because I think that there is a pressure in society to have an obedient dog. And I think that's a really unrealistic expectation to put on our pets. And I always say, look, you know, you don't need to apologize to me for having a dog that isn't obedient. In fact, I don't even like that word, because, you know, what's the connotation there? I think dogs should be I think they should be safe in society, and you should be able to, you know, control them and encourage them to come back under your control when necessary. But I think they should be free to express themselves and to be as natural and as normal as they like. So I think that there's a lot we could do there to help owners feel less self-conscious and less embarrassed by what their dogs do, because dogs like to do doggy things.
Yoga or yoga, it allows the emotion to the what the emotion, what's the emotion that comes up for the owner? Is it something subconscious from the past, their own childhood, you know, being naughty, not being allowed to be naughty, you know, what shame, guilt, grief. Grief can come up in yoga. A lot of people cry at the end of the session. Things are released through the dog in a way, because the dog is free and they can let go, and something symbiotic happens. The emotion, I wanted to ask about emotions. Do we project our emotions onto the dog sincerely? And does the dog absorb or feel our emotion 100%? What do you think about that?
Yeah, the more we understand, the more we recognize that we have more in common with dogs than we thought. So we're understanding now that we share emotions. You know, they're sentient, they're social, they're emotional, and as a result, they probably do recognize when we change emotionally. But I think more than that, their sense of smell is incredible. So I think they can change, they can detect the chemical changes in us. When you think of detection dogs, you know, they can hone in on the slightest micro changes in our behavior or in our scent profile. I think that we are very closely bonded to dogs. Dogs are unique in the fact that they are more predisposed to seek out human companionship, even over their own kind. And I don't think there's another animal that will do that. You know, they would rather be with people than their own kind, the majority of dogs. I think that's incredible. But we still label, behaviors that aren't ideal as naughty. And in fact, they're probably just natural, normal doggy behaviors. So, but in groups, I think that there is a huge size difference. And as long as you're creating a stable group of well-socialized dogs, then the result of that is probably going to be harmony. You're going to have a nice group of dogs that, in the presence of some very calm owners, are going to enjoy that experience. So I see the atmosphere that you're likely creating in your classes. I think that would be interesting to see.
I will invite you. All I'm saying is, unfortunately, it only works indoors, and it almost has to be a bulletproof, soundproof room to really make yoga work, because they jump up any sound, anything, because of the fight and flight system. And people always say, oh, we can do yoga outside. And I say, if we do it outside, we have to keep the lead on, and it'll be fun for us. But the dog can't fully benefit as in an enclosed space, which then is difficult also for rescue dogs who have been in kennels. So it brings up all sorts of things, but there's ways to work around it, and there's always one-to-ones. What is your message today? And I know I will get you back on the show because I have a billion questions, but what is your main message today?
The main message, yeah, is for anybody listening that's in a situation where they're struggling with their pet's behavior, is to switch off the telly and don't Google. And there's a wonderful organization called the ABTC, and that's the Animal Behavior Training Council. And they will make life really easy for you, because if you go on the website, they will put you in touch with an ethical, reward-based trainer, behaviorist in your area. And I wouldn't hesitate to make contact. If you're thinking, I've got a problem that I'm worried about, I'm going to leave it for a month and see how it goes, or leave it for another month and see how it goes, you may find that habit is getting more established and therefore harder to overcome with training. So be proactive and reach out. There's no such thing as a silly question. We're all here to help. And also the Blue Cross, you know, we have an amazing website full of information that can help put owners on the right track. So that's my message is there's an appeal to watch something on telly and to feel like it might be worth doing because of what these programs promise, but to be curious about that and to not be pulled in and to recognize that reward-based training will take longer, but it's definitely more rewarding for everybody involved. And it's an investment in your relationship and your future together. Kit, my dog, you know, she's been crushed somewhere along the line by somebody that's done something to her so horrible that despite living with me, and my world revolves around her, and I'm a reward-based trainer, there are flashpoints where she feels like she's going to get hit. And it breaks my heart because something's happened to her to make her feel that way about being in the company of people. So I will do everything I can to help her, but I would love to prevent other dogs from getting to that point. And we're only going to do that by sharing education and pointing people in the right direction so that they can make a better choice for their pet.
Oh, gosh, this has been so educational, and it's just the tip of the iceberg because I have a billion questions. Thank you so much for enlightening us about the Googling. I think that's so important. Stop Googling and Googling and Googling and Googling. It's the same thing when you have some kind of, you think you have a disease and you Google it and it gets worse. And these shows, we have to take a little step back. It is, after all, a lot of editing in there. Take it with a pinch of salt, I think. It's very important. That is not training. This is not training. It's an entertainment program. That's it. Just taking a step back and understanding that, I think, yeah, is so important.
Yeah, and for me, it's not even entertaining because yeah, I'm watching programs where dogs are suffering and being massively misunderstood. And I just hope that TV producers that make these decisions do a better job and create programs where we can be inspired by someone showing us how to enhance our relationship with dogs. And I would really welcome when that happens.
Absolutely. And we want to see you on TV sometime as well with your show. I'm already waiting for it.
Yeah, speak to my agent. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I bow my head with gratitude for all your hard work and all your kindness that you give to the animals. A big namapaw.
Thank you
and
very much.
I hope to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for listening to Conversations with My Dog. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, then please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. It helps others to find us. And talking of spreading the news, please tell another person about the podcast and help us reach more people and dogs. We'll be back with another episode, same time, same place, next week. Namapaw.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.